Hi, I'm Wendy Dean.
I'm Simon Talbot.
And I'm Kimmy Fleming.
And this is Moral Matters. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Season 8 of Moral Matters. This season, we're doing something different, and we're going to be bringing back voices of people we've talked to all the way back to the very beginning. But today is a really special day for us and a huge milestone for this movement. 1 year ago, on April 4th, 2023, Steerforth Press published our book, If I Betray These Words, Moral Injury in Medicine and Why It's So Hard for Clinicians to Put Patients First. We thought it only fitting to revisit the Moral Matters episodes about writing the book as a sort of celebration. I'll let Kimmy introduce them.
These two episodes are probably two of my favorites. These episodes feature a conversation between my colleagues, Dr. Wendy Dean and Dr. Simon Talbot, in which they discuss their 2022 book, If I Betray These Words, Moral Injury in Medicine and Why It's So Hard for Clinicians to Put Patients First. As I understand it, bringing this book to life was a significant undertaking, required a great deal of thought, intellect, and at times just brute force. And the end product is a remarkable piece of work. It deftly weaves the history of medicine, the evolving relationships between healthcare and capitalism, and does so by telling the very personal stories of those caught in the crosswinds of these changes. The stories are heartfelt, they're compelling. It's impossible to read this book and not walk away changed. And what I love about these episodes is you get to have a bit of a sneak peek behind the scenes about the impetus for the book, the process of writing it, and simply to hear Wendy and Simon's thoughts about the book and about moral injury more broadly. By this time, we hope that you've had the opportunity to read the book and that you enjoy this inside look at how it was written and what it means to Wendy and Simon.
So we're going to do something different today. Usually we talk to guests and learn all about the things we never thought we needed to know about healthcare that will help us move toward better. But we just released a book, If I Betray These Words, Moral Injury in Medicine and Why It's So Hard for Clinicians to Put Patients First. And we know a lot of you have already read this or plan to read it or listen to it. But we also thought that it would be great for people who are sort of wondering what's in it or wondering what we thought about it as we were in the process of writing it, what that was like and what's there. So we're going to take some time today to just talk through what a book is like to write and what's inside, what's between these covers.
So, Wendy, I'm going to sort of start off by asking you, what's the big picture here? If you're telling somebody the elevator pitch on this book, hey, buy this book, what do you tell them?
I worked really hard, buy the book. No.
Not enough.
No. So, the book is really an attempt to help people understand who the folks are who go into healthcare, and in particular into medicine, because that's what we know best. And what it's like for them when they no longer are able to make decisions based on their training, but more based on the needs of the corporations they work for. Mm-hmm.
And even above the corporations, the entire health system and how that works.
Yeah.
So when you and I were first talking about books and ways to sort of spread the word, if you like, you know, we sort of started out talking about almost nonfiction textbook style stuff. And we both sort of screwed up our noses and said, who wants to read that kind of thing? And boy, what a small audience it'll have. And so sort of settled on this idea of storytelling. Can you talk a little bit about how storytelling works in this book and the decision-making behind what stories are in there?
It became apparent really quickly that telling a dry book was not going to get the word out to anyone. This needed to be something that people felt, not thought. And so it was really, how are we going to take this overarching idea that we have that the corporatization of care is constraining clinical decision making and in the process making a lot of clinicians miserable. How do we break that down and tell it in stories about different specialists in different parts of the country? And also, what's the history behind it? Not only where are we, but how did we get here? Mm-hmm. And so what I would do is take the nugget of who is this clinician? Like, what's their specialty? What are they doing now? But how did they get here? Who are they? How did they decide to go into medicine? Where did they grow up? What was their family life like? And then at the same time, how did medicine evolve into the place that we're at now for that one particular clinician and that one aspect of mm-hmm. the challenge in healthcare that we're talking about for in that chapter?
So, Wendy, obviously there are a lot of really personal, very emotional, and heartbreaking stories in this book from a huge number of people who are extremely brave in sharing their stories. Can you talk a little bit about the challenges for you in going through that process?
Yeah, so I think the hardest thing about the book was listening to these stories day in and day out and reliving with these clinicians the trauma that they've experienced and finding ways to help them carry it by carrying some of it myself. I was not interacting with them as a psychiatrist, but in the back of my mind, you know, you can't put that down entirely. And just trying to make sure that in talking through what they were sharing with me, they didn't come out worse for wear, right? That was really, really important in telling these stories, was not to make people worse for it. But it was also amazing to hear who these people were and their determination and their grit and the fact that they, to a one, everyone in this book, no matter what they've been through, they still love medicine.
Yeah. You know, you said something really interesting there when you said that these people all had a lot of grit. And I guarantee you they all had a lot of resilience, as we know. And yet,
yeah,
that's not enough.
Yeah, we talk about, I mean, when you talk about resilience, we all know there's a paper that came out that said physicians are significantly more resilient than the average employed population. And I think it was a relief to so many physicians who had said, I got through a lot. I think I'm okay.
One person who comes up a number of times in the book, who I think is just a really spectacular example of the kind of clinician we all strive to be, is Matt Ramsay. Can you talk a little bit about Matt Ramsay's experiences?
Yeah, so I needed a physician to talk about who could sort of be an archetype. Right, and who could help people understand what is it like to go through medical school and residency and then go out into practice and still face some really serious challenges. And he was a kid who grew up in Schenectady, New York, and didn't come from a lot of money, but came from a very supportive family with single parent family. And he got through medical school. What he described was the classroom stuff was not so great, but when I got to the floors, I loved everything. And for him, he was spoiled for choice. He wanted to do everything until he finally found orthopedics. And then he said, that feels like a well-worn shoe. Mm-hmm. But then he went out into practice and his mentor, who is also Jerry Williams, is one of the, he's sort of a foil for Matt in that he really shaped in a large part who Matt Ramsay is as a physician. Not entirely, but he was somebody who modeled what standing up really looked like. So when he was faced with a real challenge in the first university where Matt worked, Jerry said, no, I'm out. This is a bridge too far, and it's crossing my ethical boundaries, and no. But the amazing thing was, when he left, he didn't strand Matt. He refused to sign his contract until Matt was happy with his own, which to me really, really speaks to a mentor who, and a leader who has their folks back.
Can you talk a little bit about the common themes that come through in this book? Each person tells a story that is in many ways very different, and their experiences, whether it's in primary care, orthopedic surgery, behavioral health, or even hospital administration. But what are some of the things that you took away and said, boy, we're all in this together?
Yeah, the first thing that stands out is that no matter what people have been through, they still love their jobs. They love the medicine they practice. They may not love everything else around it, but they are committed to this idea of being in relationship with patients for healing. Mm-hmm. And the frustrations are all about not being able to do what I imagined I would be able to do as a physician. Mm-hmm. I think the other really interesting pattern that came out was that the people who had the easier time standing up and speaking out had some things in common. They had very little debt. They either went to a state school or they went through the military. They were also pretty well versed in how the business of medicine works. And I'm not just saying how billing works and how insurance reimbursement works, but also what is the complexity of big medicine? What are the drivers? And what motivates leadership in those large hospitals? Most of them also were really clear about what the policies and regulation and legislation was around how they practiced, whether in the emergency room or in behavioral health. Knowing the details of what governs you really allows you to pull levers that you might not otherwise be able to pull, and to make arguments that are based in those policies and regulations that are more than just my gut tells me to do this. Mm-hmm.
There are going to be some people who read this book, and certainly we know there are people who've emailed us and contacted us and listened to our podcast who don't work in the US, who work in the UK, who work in Canada, who work in New Zealand, Australia, Japan, South Africa, I don't know where else now, but lots of places. There are a lot of things in this book that relate to the United States, but there's a lot of things that are universal. Can you talk a little bit about things that transcend just the U.S. health system?
I think understaffing and under-resourcing, and although that's driven by finances, it's also a matter of not listening to the folks on the front lines who say, this is what I need, mm-hmm. because it's not safe or because mm-hmm. it's not good care. It's not because I want to provide my patients with everything we could possibly provide them with, but what really stuck with me about the folks who called into the On Point radio show the other day was a nurse who said, I can't change sheets more often than every 3 days. It's not because I want to give my patients the best of the best of the best and not think about money at all, but I want to provide them with the bare essentials of good care. Mm-hmm. Clean sheets. I just want to put clean sheets on the bed.
In the last few minutes that we have here, I'm hoping you will touch base on some of the lessons that come of this. I guess we could also call them solutions, but what are some of the things that are good takeaway points from this book?
One of the things is to speak up, to find your allies, to understand who within your administration is maybe amenable to your message and how to say it in a way that they can hear it. Because when you speak up, that really goes a long way to reducing your risk of moral injury. Because you're saying, this is acting against my values. I want to do something different. Mm-hmm. So that's on an individual level. And sometimes to do that, you have to get involved in the committees that are not really that fun and it may take some time, but they're important if you want to have a voice in how your environment works. Mm-hmm. I think there are also options for acting at higher levels. So at the state level, you can advocate for prior authorization reform. That's something that happens state by state by state because it's an insurance issue and insurance is governed by the state. So go to your state legislators and tell them, we want prior authorization reform. Mm-hmm. So the other thing that we need to be really aware of is that as much as we're struggling as clinicians, our administrators also have some real challenges and pressures of their own. And I think the more that we can be curious about the quote-unquote other, the less they become the other. Then they start to look like us and we can start to find commonalities. Mm-hmm. And when we can start to understand each other and respect each other more deeply, it's easier to co-produce solutions. Yeah. So administrators may not be able to provide the best solutions alone, neither can clinicians, but when we put them together, all of a sudden, there are many more options. Mm-hmm. You know, we can also go even further and start talking about national policies. It would be great if we could somehow make health insurance much more understandable, much like we did the credit card agencies in, you know, a couple of decades ago. So that anyone who looks at their policy has a very clear understanding of what's covered, what's not covered, what their bill will be. So it's more than just price transparency. It's also transparency of how insurance works, much like the credit card industry. And then there are lots of other solutions, but maybe it's best to read them in the book.
Yeah. So the final chapter has a really thorough rundown of some of the ideas that Wendy and I have spoken about in a number of these episodes, but all in one place. And so we hope you'll get a chance to look at that in some detail and digest those. And honestly, we'd love to hear from you if you've got other ideas or comments about the things that we speak about. For something completely different. Today,
sorry. No, do it.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Today, we have decided to do a bit of a different episode. We normally sit down with guests from all walks of life, particularly those in healthcare, and talk to them about how moral injury and how the various aspects of healthcare that they work in are changing and adapting and affecting us all and our healthcare system. But today, we are shaking it up a little bit because Wendy and I have recently published a book, If I Betray These Words, Moral Injury in Medicine and Why It's So Hard for Clinicians to Put Patients First. This came out very, very recently, and we want to run through with you some of the background to that book and some of the things that are in that book and hopefully excite you enough that you may be interested in reading it.
Yeah, so this was an interesting project. One of the best stories about how this book came into being was that Sam Shem of the House of God was the one who really put the bug in our bonnet. Mm-hmm. And it was, what, 3 years ago?
I think so.
Or four.
Yeah, maybe 4 years ago because it was definitely four. Before COVID. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was May of 2019 and we had dinner with him and he said, You should write a book. And I remember I just laughed. And I said, no, really, probably shouldn't. But he was persistent. And I think he probably emailed you more than he emailed me, but he still emailed me several times over the next couple of months. and encouraged us to go through the process of finding a publisher and writing the book.
And that process is not as simple as people probably think that it is. That process of pitching something to various different publishers and having publishers recognize that this is something that others are interested in and that actually has a viable audience can be challenging, right, Wendy?
Oh, for sure. So I didn't realize, naively, right? We don't know anything about publishing. And so we naively thought that, of course, everybody would see that it was a great idea. But in fact, that's only a small part of it. The other part of it is, can you write in long form? Can you tell a story? And can you market this book? Because even a big publishing house only has a limited marketing budget.
Right. You know, one of the things that I thought was really an eye-opener to me is that it's not just about telling a story. It's about telling a story that is able to be understood by a reasonable number of people and is in a format and a form that is digestible. And so, you know, let me give put it in a different way. You and I have spent an awful lot of time speaking to healthcare professionals and lecturing and writing scientific style papers about moral injury. But it's very different telling people who are coming into their doctor's office and have never heard of this concept, have not experienced it in the world of healthcare, or have not been aware of experiencing it, and trying to write a book that is accessible to people who aren't thinking scientifically about this is not totally, it was not an easy process, put it that way.
Yeah, so what I realized very quickly was that we had to take a step back. You know, I had to take a step back even further, because what I quickly recognized is that outside of healthcare, and even outside of being a physician, even the people who work adjacent to physicians every day, the CEOs in the hospital, and even some of the other healthcare clinicians, don't really understand what physicians go through in their training. And so that was the first step, is to help people come into that world and really get an idea of, why does this become a part of our identity, right? How does our training inculcate that so deeply? So then why do we feel so strongly about being allowed to practice as we were taught to do?
That's a really important point. The time I realized it was a few years ago when somebody was interviewing you and me for a fairly high-profile article. And this person very legitimately and very honestly said to me, "So why do you care whether your patients get a good or a bad outcome? Why don't you just come to work and do your job and, you know, treat it like a production line?" And I had never realized that someone might think that way. And I think that was sort of one of the realizations, the first time for me at least, that I realized that explaining how important taking care of people is and how deeply ingrained that necessity is for exceptional care and outcomes if possible.
But then the next part of the challenge, understanding where to start the story, was the first sort of part of the problem. But then thinking about, how do you tell the story? How do you tell this big, complex story of what healthcare is and why it's so painful for so many clinicians? And in part, that was how to choose the stories of those clinicians that were struggling.
Yeah. And that's not to say there aren't many thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of other clinicians that have stories that parallel these ones. But in 286 pages, I think, how do you encapture that most effectively? And how to capture that in a way that displays the issues of moral injury most clearly, most concretely, most palpably, and frankly, most emotionally?
Learning how to find the story first, and then learning how to tell it. And then Once you have an idea of what the story might be, finding the people who are willing to talk, that was so hard. It was so hard.
Now, those people who have read it know that Wendy does a lot more writing on this than I do for by a long stretch. So Wendy, I actually have more of a question for you directly, which is, obviously there was a lot of personal growth that was involved for you in both the technical side of writing, but also going through the process of interviewing people and putting their stories down. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, and first of all, I have to thank the developmental editor, Rebecca Ratting, who walked with me literally every step of the way and kind of shepherded my, I mean, she was like my attending, my writing attending. Mm-hmm. And
fairly, you were closer to an intern back in the 1980s, I think.
Oh, boy. So it was a really hard process. First of all, just learning how, you know, I'm a psychiatrist, so I know how to talk to people. I know how to be curious. I know how to ask those questions. But understanding the process of getting a story from people, building a different level of trust, because not only am I trying to be true to their story, I'm also in some cases trying to protect them or their families or whomever else. And so trying to juggle those things. And in some cases, the characters would say, yeah, I'm an open book, but my wife wants no part of this. Now, my wife went through medical school with me, but she wants no part of it. Or my husband cannot be in this book. And so, you know, how do you tell a story around those big holes and still have it be compelling for someone?
That also tells a story on its own, right? That people have stories, but they're not 100% comfortable with identifying with those stories.
And they're risky. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes it's just plain risky to tell your story when your hospital isn't always friendly.
Well, I think one of the things that, you know, people will notice when they're reading this is how much research went on in the background to reference some of the things that are in there. You know, there's a lot of information out there and there's a lot of detail. And I think that certainly helps solidify what's in there. But yeah, granted, it's not always a comfortable place for people to be speaking.
Yeah. And I wanted readers to know not just what's happening, but why. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like, how did we build this house so we know how to renovate it?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's an amazingly hard thing to find, too. Even if you lived through it, it can still be hard to figure out exactly what the motivations were and what the various different incentives were for various things that have gone on.
Yeah. I mean, in all honesty, I read way more SEC filings than I ever want to admit to, and more 990 reports, and just much more financial literature than I ever imagined I would in my life.
Yeah.
To really dig into what were the relationships that were happening between these hospitals and these healthcare systems.
Yeah. No, it's quite amazing the rabbit holes that you can go down as you start getting deeper and deeper into this stuff, right?
Right. Right.
Tell me a little bit about how your family reacted to all of this. Only if you can, because like some people, your family happened to be in the book and I think consented to it.
They did. So I have the most supportive family and I disappeared. I mean, I didn't actually disappear, of course, but this thing consumed me. I worked on this 12 hours a day, almost every day for 18 months.
It's a lot of work.
And I was still running Moral Injury of Healthcare at the same time. So I had probably two full-time jobs. And my family, they did whatever they needed to do. My husband started doing all the cooking. I mean, I think this was self-defense, but he started doing the cooking and the grocery shop. He was, yes, it was good. It was actually
so
really good.
Continued?
Yeah.
Okay, good, good, good. Well done, Shervin.
Yep, well done, Shervin. And the kids are super, super supportive. Yeah. You know, we just had the book event. And my youngest, who is in college, came to the book event with his moral injury fleece on.
Yeah, that was nice.
Representing.
One of the things that I didn't know when we started this project was who's involved. Like, I kind of got that you could self-publish something if you were, like, really wanted to. And then it's sort of you and a company. But working with a publisher and working with an editor and working with publicists was a whole new industry that I had no idea about. Do you want to just run through a little bit about who's actually involved from soup to nuts when it comes to getting a book onto a shelf in a bookstore?
Oh my goodness. So there was the publisher, Chip Fleischer, who saw the idea in the book and he recognized what we needed to be successful and he provided that. So Steerforth Press is probably, we could not have done it without them. Mm-hmm. And Rebecca Ratting was the developmental editor who really was remarkable mm-hmm. and patient and direct. And she was the developmental editor that pulled the story out of me.
And kind of is the voice of reason when you get in the weeds and you're speaking about something that's not going to be understandable to anybody but you, correct?
Oh, yes. When
Many
you get
times.
In the weeds or when you get way too big or when the story isn't following or, you know, any number of, like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, she was the voice of reason overall. And then we have a publicist, Anthony Lasasso, who has spent the last 6 months trying to get this book on various radars like bookstores and radio programs and all over the place.
And ultimately, the Wall Street Journal.
He got it to the Wall Street Journal. Yes.
You know, the other thing that he was talking about that I thought was really interesting is how many copies of these books get sent out to various people to get various, you know, influential people to read, to write comments, and to get excited about this kind of stuff. And there's a lot involved in getting a book into hands and getting a buzz around it.
Yeah. And then we have folks who are managing the sort of libraries and schools and bulk orders and the pre-publication folks. And, you know, it's a whole machine that happens in the background mm-hmm. that is well-oiled, that is full of experts that I know nothing about. You know, like, I don't know anything about what they do. I mean, I know what they do. They've told me what they do. But, you know, it is so far outside my wheelhouse.
And then, of course, there's the final people in the chain, which are all you guys who have actually bought this book. And I think it's been both really exciting and fascinating for Wendy and I to watch numbers tick up on Amazon and the book go up and down in new releases and bestsellers and things like that. It is only through people who listen to this podcast and friends of ours and people for whom these ideas resonate that this book is out there. So, you know, one of the people at the book release event at the Harvard Bookstore asked a very specific question about their own healthcare system that they are a patient in. And it was so fascinating for me to hear somebody outside of a doctor or nurse or some form of healthcare professional to be asking about this stuff. And as I said to her, this book was really written for you so that you could get a glimpse into what's going on with so many of the people that are trying to give you the best possible care possible. And hopefully you see some of the challenges they're going through and how much they have to push through to provide you with the kind of quality care that you're getting.
Yeah, because they're going to protect you. I mean, I think that's really come through with some of the other guests on the podcast, like Elena Perea, who was very clear in saying, I don't want my patients to know about this. They have enough to deal with. Yeah, so I also think that the other really profound thing about writing this book was the trust that people put in me with these stories. Because I spent hours talking to many of these characters, and not just talking to them about what happened in medicine, but also, who are you? Mm-hmm. Who are you as a person? What drove you to this place or to your specialty? What drove you into medicine in the first place? And what else did you do with your life around that? Mm-hmm. And it was such a privilege to be able to learn that about so many of the characters and really appreciate the variety of people who go into medicine, but also the commonalities between them. Mm-hmm. That they all said, I wanted to do good in the world. Mm-hmm. In some sense or another.
As you and I have discussed, that is almost the prerequisite for feeling moral injury, is I went into this for the right reason, to do the right thing, and that's so challenging. And so I think it's no surprise that that is such a commonality among people that are struggling in this area.
Yeah. I also will say that I'm so grateful for how many people this book brought into my orbit. The people were so generous with their time, like unbelievably generous. I would ask them for an hour and they would say, absolutely.
Yeah. And after the launch, how many people have contacted us and said things like, hey, I can see myself in 2, 3, 4 of the people that you've written about.
Right.
What you're talking about makes sense to me. This story is exactly what I went through, or this is this problem that I'm having, and I'm so fascinated to see this is how somebody else handled it. You know, keep those emails coming. If you have something to talk about, we just love to hear it. And we enjoy hearing what people are doing, and especially some of the things that people are succeeding in.
Yeah. It almost feels like the first stat article all over again, because I'm getting a lot of the same calls with people saying, oh my gosh, this is language that I've been looking for years. I had one physician at one of the book events who came in, and as soon as she saw me, she burst into tears. Mm-hmm. And she said, I'm only on chapter 2 and I already feel more seen than I have in years.
Well, that's a great place for us to wrap up for today. As always, thank you for joining us for Moral Matters.
Our producer is Dave Young at Widget Studios.
As you all know, we are a grassroots organization, and your contributions will help these episodes to continue coming. If any of the work we do is helpful to you, please give back if you can by making a donation at our website, fixmoralinjury.org.
While you're there, go to the podcast page for all the resources we mentioned in today's episode and browse through the pages and pages of other resources we've cataloged. The book list alone could keep you busy for months.
And while you're there, if you want to order a copy of this book and read it in more detail, it is right on our webpage and you can catch it from there and order it directly online. You can also help by spreading the word and encouraging conversations. Share this episode with friends and colleagues or use social media links. We would love to see and hear your thoughts.
Plus, if you subscribe, rate, and review the show, that makes it easier for new listeners to find us.
Thank you for listening.
And stay well.